Gonzalez. President Obama's new jobs proposal is causing a political stir on Capitol Hill, but the White House claims it could make a big difference in Indian country. Matt Laszlo reports.
The plan calls for a mixture of tax breaks and infrastructure spending. The White House says more than 1 million Native Americans would benefit from extending a payroll tax holiday, while 20,000 Native small business owners would see relief. Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, head of the Democratic Governors Association, says the plan will also mean jobs for tens of thousands of people.
Everybody in this country expects their government to work. Doing nothing is not an option. And for the last 6 months on jobs, this Congress has done nothing.
Republicans see things differently. California Congressman Tom McClintock says it's time to unwind regulations instead of increasing federal spending once again.
What he's talking about is more of the same spending programs that have failed to stimulate the economy, because government cannot create jobs. Government can create the conditions in which jobs either flourish or wither.
In the coming weeks, the president will lay out his plan to pay for the proposal and to cut the deficit further. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo.
This weekend marks the 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks on America, when hijacked planes hit the Twin Towers in New York and the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. Since then, National Native News has covered how the events have impacted Native people, including veterans sharing their perspective and rules changing in border crossing and other travel restrictions. We've reported on Congress and war in the Middle East, including the number of Native military service members who have lost their lives, and recently, the Native perspective on the death of Osama bin Laden. Today, a look back at an interview with Mohawk ironworkers on the 5th anniversary. New York ironworker Michael Swamp told National Native News then that a group of Mohawk ironworkers knew right away they needed to go to Ground Zero. With a van full of boots, hats, gloves, and other supplies, they arrived at the scene 2 weeks after the attacks, which Swamp says was shocking.
It's nothing what you see on TV unless you're actually there. It just, the smell, the destruction, it was, like I said, it's just something that I'll never forget. It was a war zone.
The group helped in cleanup efforts. George Norton from Canada was a crane foreman.
It was very, you know, I mean, it was a total mess. And, you know, you saw a lot of things that you don't want to remember about, you know. It was sad when all they had, when they would find, you know, a fireman or a policeman, and they'd have like a ceremony and take them out, you know, make a procession, and it was very sad.
Those were the comments of Mohawk ironworkers on the 5th anniversary of September 11th. There are generations of Mohawk ironworkers renowned for being unafraid to walk on high beams. They also helped build the World Trade Center. The Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewas radio station hits the air. This week, the Minnesota Tribe station WGZS The Moon went on air. Listeners can hear music and other programming from 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. Extended hours and more programming is being planned. During this month in 2010, the Piapaw First Nation in Saskatchewan honored its famous chief with 3 days of celebrations. Piapaw was known to be a brave warrior, but also a peaceful negotiator who championed the rights of his people. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Anderson, Miller, and Munson.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011, where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTWO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guest in the studio are two of the 10 divas that are going to be appearing in Hoosier Diva event, which is going on at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center on Saturday night, and it is a sold-out event. But in the meantime, here is Shona Strasser and Kari Groban. Thank you for coming by the station.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
So we're going to ask you some questions, and you'll alternate your answers. First, we'll start with Kari. What to you is a diva?
It's a very hard question. I was listening to, actually, Laura Haywood, her answer on the radio. was that yesterday? And she connected that to sort of a self-confidence. And I like that answer very, very
That's
much.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. A sense that you can do exactly what you want to do with your voice and your performance and yourself and everything.
Yeah.
Sean, how about you?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And there's something about being bigger than life. Life, I think that's maybe a little much. But it was about being big, not being small. You know what I mean? Big in performance, so that you try things that, you wouldn't normally try to do.
And this could be a little bit too much for me because I'm expecting catfighting and you're being very agreeable today.
We tend to be an agreeable bunch, which actually I'm kind of relieved about.
Yes.
Shona, when did you discover you were a diva and not just a mortal singer?
That makes me laugh, Jeff. It means that we're immortal.
Radio waves live on forever, so it's okay.
Right. I think I grew up doing a lot of musical theater, that just kind of makes it's really put acting in songs. Like, I'm really not a very good trained singer, but I can act like one, which I don't know if, it's acting training for me.
Corey?
Yes. I think at least being confident in a performance setting, I don't know exactly when, like the moment that happened, but I do kind of recall kind of discovering how it's very different to be on stage than to be in a social setting, for example. Like, in a social setting, I would be very, very shy and not really, like, want to make too much out of myself, or, like, of myself. And on stage, you're suddenly, like, put in a situation where that you are in the spotlight and you are supposed to take the attention of people, and everybody is okay with that,
yeah.
You know, and they kind of give you the space to do what you want to do, and that was a wonderful feeling, and whether that means that I am a diva, we will find out.
Kari, what does singing do for you emotionally and spiritually?
Emotionally, it's just something. I know that when I have not sung in a while, and then all of a sudden, and then I sing again, a big, like, huge relief and release kind of flows through my body and soul, and it's like drought without singing, and it's one of the things that I need to have in my life, I think, simply.
Shona?
Well, it's kind of interesting for me, and I think for a lot of singers, it's just, it's so connected to breath. It's all about breath support and what you do with your breath.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, that's kind of like the practice of yoga and meditation and all those kinds of things. So it's like releasing sound in a way for me is like I don't want to say it's meditation because it's not exactly like that, but it's definitely a release and a connection with breath that I don't have all the time.
Hmm. Shona, what singers do you look up to and why?
Oh, wow. I like rock and roll singers a lot. I like Pat Benatar. I like jazz singers too, Ella Fitzgerald and Billie Holiday and But I certainly like rock and roll. I have a connection either to kind of rocking out.
Sorry, how about you?
Well, I think I just remembered one of my favorite artists, where it was like Michael Jackson when I was a kid, and other artists, other performers that makes you dance. Like my first experience would be with through dancing rather than singing, and but in the older years, Jeff Buckley is one of my big time favorite singers. And artists and lyricists, songwriters, and everything. Just so too bad that he died so young. I've listened a lot to Ella Fitzgerald and admire her a lot. But there's a whole bunch of wonderful singers.
All right, what do you do to keep your voice in shape?
Well, I try to be careful about what I eat and drink and when and how before performances, at least, and warm up and cool down and that kind of stuff. Just realized in Juneau, it's a constant struggle to keep your voice in shape just because you keep constant colds all the time in this nasty cold that is going around now. It's like,
yeah.
I'm just, this whole week I've been drinking my teas and steaming and making sure that I'll be capable of singing on Saturday.
Me too.
Is that your final answer?
I forgot what the question was.
What do you use to keep your voice in shape? What do you do?
Oh, the same thing. Warm ups and yes, same thing. I mean, the other thing that I think Kari and I too are kind of lucky because we have a lot of practice, so we get a lot of practice. Mm. So we're lucky enough that we get to be on stage a lot, so that keeps you kind of in shape sometimes.
Shona, what songs will you be singing, and why did you pick them?
Adele's Rolling in the Deep, because it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful song. It's fun. It's upbeat. And then Heart's Crazy on You, which is kind of that rock and roll thing that I like to do.
Are you?
I am doing Lilac Wine, which is written by James Shelton, and Lover, You Should Have Come Over, by Jeff Buckley, and doing both of them because I have wanted to do them for a long time, but they're both in a genre that hasn't really lent themselves for a performance, at least not in the settings that I've been in so far, and it's just been a great chance to work on them and get them out there.
Mm-hmm. Who are the people accompanying you? Stage.
Oh, we have the greatest band. Let's see, both of us have, all of us have Simon Taylor and Dale McFarlane on drums, Simon's on bass, and then Mike Moss is actually playing a bunch of instruments. And then me personally, Riley Woodford's going to join me on stage, which is nice. And then two backup singers, Mara Lamb and Giselle Stone. That's pretty great.
Mm. I'm going to have Mike Moss in one of the songs, and then my husband Jason Caputo is joining in on electric guitar for the Lover You Should Have Come Over.
Buckley tune,
yeah. Couldn't do it without guitar.
Yeah, cool.
Last question, Kari. What do you hope will set you apart from the other divas?
I don't know if this will set me apart, but I'm just hoping to do justice to the songs for a start, and deliver them in the most honest and powerful way that I can manage to do. Mm-hmm. And if I can manage that, that's enough to me.
Yeah, I don't know what it'll set it apart, really, but I hope to have a lot of fun. yeah, hope to have lots of fun.
The winner of the diva thing is the one who raised the most money.
Yeah.
And the fundraising effort started months ago. So all of the divas have been raising money in their name for the Juno Lyric Opera up until now, and then Saturday will be the final kind of thing.
Final fundraising push.
So even if you can get in to see the show, if you have a favorite diva that you would like to support and that you would like to see succeed and win and have lots of glory and honor, you can go into the Juno Lyric Opera website and vote for your favorite diva and make a donation. It's really easy. Just Google Juno Lyric Opera.
Yeah.
All right. Fiona Strasser and Kari Goldman, thank you very much for coming down to the station and talking about Who's Your Diva?
Thanks, Jeff.
Saturday night at the Juno Arts and Culture Center.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care, and nothing is going right, all I say, close your eyes and think of me, and soon brighten up even your darkest nights.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You just call out my name, and you know.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for that pre-recorded interview with the divas. Music, incidentally, was from an original VH1 television show that was very similar to what's going to be happening at the Divas show. So a little music there. I have two guests with me in the studio now who are going to talk about an event that is coming up on Sunday, I believe. Yeah, Sunday. And my guests are Brian Long, who is a division chief for career staff with Capital City Fire and Rescue, and also Mark Fuette is here. He's a firefighter EMT. So I wanted to ask you gentlemen first to tell us a little bit about the national scope of this event that you're going to be doing part of here in Juneau.
Sure. The event we're doing is something that's been taking place in the city of Denver since about 2005. And a few years later, the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation got on board with it and started promoting it in a grander sense. And this year, they really made a push to try to get a stair climb held in every state. They got halfway there. About 25 states are going to be participating. A total of 47 stair climbs, approximately, are going to be taking place this Sunday in 25 states. So National Fallen Firefighters Foundation did a really good job of getting the word out there, and it's kind of limited to those who have the time and availability and a structure to actually climb in as well. But we were fortunate enough to get that so we could get on board and do it.
Brian, what's a stair climb? What stairs are climbed, how many of them, and so forth?
We will be climbing in the federal building itself, and when you use from the basement to the top floor, we can actually get 10 elevated floors per trip. It's about an 11-story building when you start at the bottom and go up. And we want to climb 110 stories total to simulate the height of the World Trade Center, which is the hike that several firefighters and other public safety agents made that day before they collapsed.
Are these guys running up the stairs? Are they walking up the stairs? How do you, and are they in full battle armor here?
Right. These are good questions. We can't really run too well. We are going to be wearing as much gear as we can each individually safely carry for 110 stories. You'll see some folks will be in full personal protective equipment, which is helmet, boots, fire protective clothing, pants, coats, suspenders, their tools, their gloves. They'll be wearing an air pack, Some of them may take some hose packs up, which is additional weight. We can see folks carrying anywhere from 60 to 100 pounds total up the stairs on top of their own body weights for 110 stories.
Now, unfortunately, because the federal building's a closed building, we won't be able to see this, but we know it's going on.
Yes. You'll see police and fire apparatus and personnel parked outside of it, walking in and out. It is a closed building. It's a Sunday. And we would be overwhelming their security divisions because we also have to go through security. We'll be going through a security checkpoint, getting checked, all of our equipment entering the structure, just as climbers, and that would be a lot to handle to let the public in as well.
Were either of you involved in any part of 911?
Not directly.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
And same. No.
Mark, okay. However, I guess what I'm thinking about is, did it change the way you felt about what you do as a fireman, as a first responder after the fact that the event happened and like that? Did it change the way we respond?
It changed responses, certainly. I think personally, those of us who were fairly dedicated in the first place, it didn't change for us, but it added more clarity as to why we believed in what we believed and why we feel the way we do about our service. As far as responses, it drastically changed responses nationally. Of course, there's a lot of rules. There's a lot of contingencies. The very security system we're going to be going through at the federal building is because of things like 9/11. Those things weren't there before. So now they are, and everything about our way of life has changed, obviously. But I think as far as firefighters and the dedicated firefighters, police officers, and national public safety agents, I don't think it changed. I think it just hardened what they already knew and believed, and it became more apparent and more publicly obvious to everybody nationally.
Mark, your title is you're a firefighter EMT.
Correct.
Can you address that same question? Has what you do when you respond changed?
Not for responding has changed, but the stuff, as Brian was saying here, going places, getting into places is not as easy as in the past.
Even when you're trying to respond to an emergency and that sort of
correct.
Thing.
Correct. I can put the federal building, for right now, if we respond to the federal building anywhere in there, there's security things we got to go through, as opposed to, 10, 11 years ago where it was much easier to walk into the lobby there, get in the elevator, and go up to the floor that we needed to get to.
Brian, how many people will actually participate in the stair climb?
Total actual climbers is ranging between 40 and 50 right now. We actually still have a few people that just signed up this morning. So we'll probably have close to 50 total climb. There's going to be a pre-climbing group, and that's those of us that are actually setting up and running the climb event itself. A few of us are going to climb early, get our climb out of the way, set up the command post and the refreshments and everything else for the climb, and then we'll host that and call it a day. So there's actually a little climb that happens first, still a full 110 stories, of course, and then the main event happens after that. Our family members are also included. They're there for support, and other members of PD and Fire and other agencies are going to be there supporting us as well. So about 50 climbers and another probably total of 100 people that are going to be there lifting our spirits and pushing us up the stairs.
So one more time now, this starts at what time, in case people want to have this in their minds?
Sure. You'll start to see apparatus showing up and dropping equipment off at the federal building somewhere after 11 a.m. on Sunday.
The first climbers would?
The first official climbers are going to start climbing in the stairwells at approximately 2:30.
2:30 in the afternoon.
Yep.
And about how long do you think it'll take them to finish the 110?
It depends on levels of fitness and the amount of stuff they're trying to carry up the stairs. It could take anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half, and as long as 2 hours to do a full 110 stories even.
So if someone wants to hold these men in their minds, they should start that process probably around 2:30 and think about it for about an hour and a half.
Absolutely.
Okay, really good. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I really appreciate your coming down and sharing this with us.
Thank you much
Thank
for
you.
Having us.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 9th of September. 2011. It's the birth of an early writer of the American Southwest, Mary Hunter Austin, born Carlinville, Illinois, 1868. Went to college in Illinois. She was in love with geology, collected fossils. Then she moved out to California and spent most of her life there in the desert on the eastern edge of the Sierras. Studied the geology, the plants and animals, the weather, the native people. And she wrote a book in 1903 called The Land of Little Rain. It was probably her best-known book, but she wrote many others, novels and plays and essays. And it's the birthday of Leo Tolstoy, born near Tula, Russia, 1828, to a noble family. Lost his mother as a young boy, but had a pleasant childhood. His father had an extensive library for the boy to read from. He went swimming and sledding and played in the fields and woods at the family estate. After his father died, he went off to university. He managed to teach himself about 12 languages, but he was not so interested in academics, more interested in gambling, drinking, and women. Dropped out of college, spent years visiting brothels and drinking hard and racking up gambling debts. Finally, he signed up for the army at the suggestion of his brother, joined an artillery unit in the spring of 1851. And the following winter, Tolstoy, at the age of 23, wrote his first novel. 1854, he was promoted and sent to the front to fight in the Crimean War, and was horrified by the violence, and also in 1857 by a public execution that he witnessed in Paris. He said, "The sight revealed to me the instability of my superstitious belief in progress when I saw the head part from the body and how they thumped separately into the box. I understood with my whole being that no theory of the reasonableness of our present progress could justify this deed." By 1863, Tolstoy had finished a draft of what would become the first part of a novel he was calling 1805, set during the Napoleonic Wars and the French invasion of Russia. He rewrote, he expanded it, gave it a new name, War and Peace, and it came out in 1867. And 6 years later came Anna Karenina. Here's a poem for today by John Updike, entitled Fargo. "The fertilest soil this side of the Tigris and Euphrates, so the schoolchildren of the countryside are taught, of their land, flat as a checkerboard to the hem of the sky. The giant sky, pale green at dusk, stays black long after morning cow milking time. Wind is incessant in winter, so that snow falls sideways like Arctic sunshine. This land of Lutherans and sugar beets thickens its marvelous thinness here at the edge of a red river, whose windings alone betray the rectilinear. Downtown, parking space is no problem, and grain-fed health rewards those God's grandeur does not drive mad." A poem by John Updike, Fargo, from his collected poems 1953 to 1993, published by Alfred A. Knopf, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Betsy Allister. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Pat Moore. Moore back with you again, guest hosting for Jeff Brown, who's taking a break today. It's 3:30 here at KTOO, and my next guest is a lady from the advocacy, who is the advocacy coordinator, and is going to talk to us about Saturday's Recovery Walk, which is coming up this weekend, as a matter of fact. Terry Tibbett, tell us about Recovery Walk first. I know you're that's not your primary focus, and then we'll talk about Recovery Month in a moment.
Sure. Recovery Walk is organized by some people at SEARCH, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Corporation, and other people, other organizations too. And the recovery community is gathering together at Marine Park tomorrow at 1 o'clock. That's Saturday, September 10th at 1 o'clock. And they will be walking in solidarity for recovery from Marine Park all the way to Douglas, Sandy Beach. And at Sandy Beach, there's a potluck. There'll be some drumming and lots of people in recovery to visit with and talk with. And you don't have to go on the walk to be at the potluck, so you can just show up sometime around 2:30 at Sandy Beach if you want to do that too. But
is there any charge for participating?
No,
in the
walk? No.
Do you get a T-shirt or anything?
And it's not that. It's not that fancy.
Okay.
It's just a walk and you know, just to kind of walk and talk and get over to the other side and then eat and share some stories and drumming and stuff. So.
Okay. Now, it's called Recovery Walk, and this is September's Recovery Month, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my first question is, recovery from what?
National Recovery Month is put on by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health something administration. So anyway, that's the group is it's recovery from substance abuse, alcoholism, drug abuse, and or mental illness. That's what it's celebrating people and the people who treat people in recovery. So treatment providers as well as people themselves in recovery.
Okay. And you work with an agency that does a lot of work on recovery. Could you tell us a bit about that group?
Well, I work with the Alaska Mental Health Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. And we are a part of a team of people who have been organizing events throughout the month of September for Recovery Month. And so there's the National Council on Drug Dependence and Alcoholism and Drug Dependence as part of this. Juneau Youth Services is helping organize the Gastineau Human Services and JAMI, Juneau Alliance for Mental Health Incorporated. The Canvas is participating. The Goldtown Nickelodeon is participating. SEARCH, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Corporation, they're participating. The FASD Diagnostic Clinic is also participating, which is a good lead-in to what's happening today for mm-hmm. Recovery Month. And we talked about it yesterday, but in case you weren't listening to the radio yesterday, today is Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorders Awareness Day. So that's International FASD Awareness Day. And restaurants all over the community, there's about 15 or 25 restaurants that are participating. They have table tents on the tables telling you a little bit about what FASD is, what fetal alcohol spectrum disorders are, and they are caused by drinking during pregnancy. So part of the promotion is to offer every pregnant woman a free non-alcoholic beverage in these selected restaurants. So that's happening today all over the community in honor of International FASD Awareness Day, but also out at SEARCH, the Ethel Lund Medical Center is hosting an information booth. So if you want to learn about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders and, you know, what are the statistics and what are the facts and figures about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders or FASD, you can go out there and ask questions. And today's the day for that.
What is the Ethel Lund Medical Institute?
The Ethel Lund Medical Institute is part of SEARCH, the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Corporation, and beyond that, I can't tell you much more because I don't work out there. That's a group of people who's participating in the Recovery Month planning and everything, but it's not my area, so I couldn't tell you much more about that.
Are there other activities or events similar to the FASD Awareness Day that's going on today?
Yeah, actually, for the rest of the month, every Wednesday on every Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. there at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, we are hosting Recovery Film Festival. So last week we had a film called Marwan Call, and next week we're having, next week on Wednesday, we're having No Kidding, Me Too, which is a movie that Joe Pantoliano, he was famous, for, he performed on The Sopranos, and he played Guido on Risky Business.
Huh.
Anyway, he has a mental illness, and he made this film, this documentary, that sort of talks about stigma and shame related to having a mental illness, and it shed lights on what nearly 100 million Americans suffer in isolation, is what it says here. I'm just reading from the form here. But it's a pretty good film. It's a really good film, and it's just one of the films that we're hosting every Wednesday. Every Wednesday there'll be a different one. I won't go into each one. But
are those free, or is there a charge
for them? Oh, yeah, they're free. Everything okay. for Recovery Month is free. On September 16th, which is next Friday, no, is it next Friday?
Well,
yeah, it would be next.
Today's the 9th.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah. The next Friday is the poetry jam that's happening at the Canvas, and the theme is recovery. So if you have poems that you've written and want to participate in the poetry jam, it's happening at the Canvas starting at 6:30. You get there at 6 o'clock to sign up. It starts at 6:30. They're going to have a non-competition section, but most of that event is a competition style poetry jam. So that's happening next week. And then also on September 30th, we have the Soberfest event, which is a big party. We rent Juno Arts and Culture Center, the Jack, and we bring a live band. There'll be food, real cheap food, not too expensive, like pizza and pop and stuff like that. There'll be a lot of hula hooping and dancing, and we'll have addiction professional awards that happens for a short time. The mayor, I don't think the mayor is going to be in town, but one of the mayor's representatives will be there to read a proclamation. And I mean, that's a short, that part of it will be a short part. The most of it's a party.
Terry, you're a wealth of information about this. I'm wondering if someone didn't write down everything that you said. Is there like a website or a central telephone number or any way that someone could call and say, I remember she said something about, and try to get to that event?
Sure. The website's too long to give over the air. No one will.
What can they Google?
But you can Google the Alaska Mental Health Board. And or the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. And we have a statewide calendar on our website. So that's one thing you could do. Or you can call my number, and it's 465-4765. And that's it rings through to my cell phone if I'm not there. So you can definitely call me anytime, and I would be glad to answer any questions about Recovery Month.
Wonderful, Terry. Thank you very, very much for coming down and sharing this with us.
Yeah, thank you, too.
It's getting better all the time. I used to get mad at my school.
I can't complain.
The teachers that taught me weren't cool.
I can't complain.
They're holding me down, turning me round, filling me up with your rules. I've got to admit, it's getting better. She loves. Man of
Broadcast support comes from McDonald's, now serving mango pineapple smoothies at McDonald's, open daily in Juneau on Trout Street in the Valley.
It's 3:41 here at KTOO, and I have with me now two guests from the University of Alaska Southeast. Madeline Lefebvre is here, and also Marcia Souza, who is the Dean of Arts and Sciences. And my two guests are going to talk about an upcoming series of events and a concert, I guess that's on Sunday. Is that right, Marcia?
Correct. Yes, on Sunday we're delighted to host Etsuko Kimura-Pedersen and Paul Krejci from Fairbanks. Etsuko's a composer, and she writes original modern music for two pianos. So both she and Paul will be playing, and they'll be joined by Megan Johnson from Juno as well. They're going to do an hour of music on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Etsuko's originally from Japan, so she's performed her music in Japan as well. And you may not know it, but the University of Alaska has a sister city arrangement or a sister university arrangement with Tohoku University in Sendai City. So that performing hall was damaged severely in the earthquake and the flood last spring. So Etsuko would really like to do, if anyone buys her CDs or if there are donations, that would go toward rebuilding Tohoku University's performing arts hall.
Wonderful.
So the concert is free of charge, though, and we invite everybody to come. And she'll do a little slideshow in the middle about Tohoku, too.
You said two pianos. Now, I know that is this in the library on Sunday?
This will be actually in the Egan Lecture Hall.
Oh, in the Egan Lecture Hall. Mm-hmm. Okay. And there's one large grand piano up there that I believe was brought up as a donation from outside mm-hmm. several years ago.
Yes, as part of our piano campaign.
What's the second piano?
We've actually moved the Kauai upright in there. We could not fit two grands in that space. So.
And who will play each of the pianos?
I believe that Etsuko will be playing the grand and Paul Krejci will be playing the upright. They've performed these pieces together numerous times over the past several years.
Have you heard them, Marcia?
I have. I've heard them in Fairbanks, and it's quite impressive. It's lovely.
Again, the concert starts when?
3 o'clock Sunday afternoon in the Egan Lecture Hall.
Okay, and there's no charge?
No charge.
Okay, but if someone does buy Etsuko's CDs, you said that the money goes toward helping the university recover its music.
Yes,
department.
And Sendai.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, do you have any other events coming up that you'd like to share with us that out of the School of Arts and Sciences?
No, but I'd love to have Madeline introduce the Egan Lecture Series, the Evening at Egan Series, and then we can talk a little bit about our first big concert there as well.
Wonderful. Go ahead,
Madeline. So, Pat, the Evening at Lecture at Egan Lecture Series is entering its 14th year.
14th?
It's coordinated from the Chancellor's Office, and we draw heavily on the talent and the talent and the energy of the School of Arts and Sciences, but of all our schools. It was the brainchild of Chancellor Pugh when he first became Chancellor, and he may have even done it, I didn't get to ask him this before I took off, when he was Dean of the School of Arts and Sciences and Education at the time. But so we're in our 14th year, and it's meant to be a showcase of what goes on at UAS, but it's also become the strongest impression, I think, or expression, rather, of our connection with the Juneau community. Each event is just, sold out, even though they're all free. We fill them up. And like with the first one this year, it's a series of 10 lectures. The first one begins next Friday night at 7 p.m. It's not actually in the lecture hall because we know that with Alexander Tutanov, we fill it to the rafters. So we do it in the library. So it's free. It's open to the public. And Alexander Tutanov actually is an example of how the community just absolutely comes out and doesn't miss an opportunity to hear him. And so it just solidifies the connection between the university and the community and gets the opportunity also for our faculty to get out there and share either their research or some talent that they don't actually get to exercise every day in their teaching and in their contact with students. It's just a marvelous series. We're very proud of it, and it's exciting to put it together.
So this is another concert.
It is.
And, again, the time on this is?
7 p.m.
Okay.
In the library. The following Friday, maybe I can just quickly say there's a wonderful title, and it's going to be a wonderful lecture, and then we'll be back in the evening lecture hall. That one will be September 23rd. It's called Geographies of the Land and of the Heart. And the lecture that day, the featured person is Peggy Shoemaker, and she's the Alaska Writer Laureate. So that'll be in the lecture hall. That's also free, and it's at 7 the following Friday. All the information about the Evening at Egan Lecture Series is on the UAS website,
uas.alaska.edu/...
Egan Lecture.
Egan Lecture. Yes.
Logical.
Thank you, Marcia.
So probably if someone just Googled UAS Egan Lecture...
Absolutely.
They
would come right
They'd
up.
Come right to that,
yes.
that site.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I was looking at the catalog of events that was coming up. I think an ad appeared in the paper the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that some of the lectures come from other parts of the University of Alaska system. You have people coming in from Fairbanks, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's always at least one or two of these that have a scientific twist to them.
Yeah.
The lecture series ranges across a really broad selection of things.
Perhaps the example that struck you is on October 28th, Shad O'Neill, who's with the U.S. Geological Survey Alaska Science Center in Anchorage, has a collaboration with R. Aaron Hood, who is professor of geophysics and does a lot of research on the glacier. Mm-hmm. He is famous for, in Juneau, and I think more than in Juneau, but certainly here we know he is well known for the research that he does on the glacier and the activity that he generates and the opportunities that he brings to students to do research right here in our backyard. So it's through his collaboration with Chad that Chad is coming down. And the title of his lecture is going to be Widespread Changes to Alaska's Glaciers. And of course, the tie to climate change.
That was the one I was.
I'm glad it caught your attention because that's a good example. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, the School of Arts and Sciences has been growing at the University of Alaska Southeast, I think, for quite a while.
Yes, it is.
How large is the school now? How would you measure its size?
We're probably 70% of the student body at UAS, so we have about 3,500 students. We're about 70% of that. Some of our largest majors are the group of art majors. We've up to like 140 art majors at this point. We have a really large contingent of baccalaureate and liberal arts students. And then, of course, our science programs are growing as well, marine biology and our environmental sciences program.
Are there master's programs in the School of Arts and
Sciences? In the School of Arts and Sciences, we do not have graduate programs, although we do in the School of Education and the School of Management.
And then I think people who may not be conversant with how universities run don't know that a big part of your mission is the general educational courses that all
yes.
students are required to take.
Yes, so if even School of Management students take their general education requirements in the School of Arts and Science, and those are the general liberal arts requirements in English and math and, yeah, your broad liberal education.
So the faculty numbers about what?
We have about 42 regular faculty, and then we supplement that with a lot of adjuncts. A lot of local community people come and teach in their specialty area. We have a really talented and highly educated population in Juneau that shares their expertise and experience with us.
This may be an unfair question, but because we didn't talk about it beforehand, but do you know how many faculty members are presenting at Evening at Egan?
While you go on and chat, I can give it to you.
Okay.
Yep.
So you're thinking two?
I think it's two this season.
Okay.
Last year, I think we had three.
And which ones are those?
Paul Neely is presenting.
Very good.
And he's talking about...
She's his dean, so she would know.
Saul is a great speaker. I think everyone will enjoy that. He's speaking on tricks to read scripture, story and truth in a post-secular age. Saul is an English professor, but also a philosopher, and he's a great, great speaker.
And the date on that one?
And that one is October 21st.
Okay.
And on November 4th, it's David Noon, who's the associate professor of history, and he's also chair of the social sciences department. The title of his lecture is The Southerner, Abraham Lincoln as a White Supremacist Hero.
Wow. Well, that should be food for thought,
yes,
at least.
Absolutely.
So, again, now, the Evening at Egan lecture series is always at 7 o'clock on Fridays.
Correct.
Usually, it's in...
The Egan Lecture Hall.
Okay, but when it's a concert that's going to have huge attendance, then you move
or
it to...
Or even non-concert, when it's
okay.
just, you know, throughout the series here, and when folks go to the website, they'll see that it's mentioned for each one, what the venue is.
Okay.
And we're fortunate to have the opportunity to talk to you about it every week. For instance, with Tutanov next week, he will be your guest on Friday afternoon as well.
Wonderful.
So you will be focusing on his presentation and so on and so forth throughout our 10-part series this fall. So that's a great opportunity for us. We really appreciate that.
Well, Evening at Egan is back online at UAS, and everyone who has a free Friday evening for one of these wonderful programs can find it on the website. take a look at what's coming up. Thank you very much, Madeline. Thank you very much for both of you coming down. I really appreciate you coming, Marcia. I know it's busy being a dean, particularly at the beginning of the semester.
But it's an exciting time of the year, too.
It certainly is.
And thank you for having us.
Thank you. Music by Alexander Tutanov, which will be featured in a concert upcoming at the University of Alaska Southeast. It's 3:54 in Juneau, and you're listening to KTOO-FM. This Saturday hike for September 10th will be the Mount Bradley, which is commonly known as the Mount Jumbo Trail. It's a difficult hike with a 3,337-foot elevation gain. Group and weather will determine the length and the final destination on this hike. If you're planning on going on it, they advise that you wear waterproof hiking or rubber boots, warm layers of clothing. They'd like you to bring plenty of food and water. You'll meet at the trailhead at the 300 block of 5th Street in Douglas. The trailhead is the 300 block of 5th Street in Douglas. The hike begins at 9:30 in the morning. No dogs or firearms, please, and have a great hike. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators, in the Valley and Auk Bay area, you can tune to K276AF at 103.1 MHz. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, it's K269AO. It's at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210AS at 89.9 MHz. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau. We're on digital channel 871. You can hear KRNN on digital channel 872 and KXLL on 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. The next Juneau afternoon, we'll be talking with Virginia Stonkus about the Rotary Youth Exchange Program. Jeffrey Klo and Ray Gardner will be here to talk about Saturday's Discovery Eagle Crest Day, Discover Eagle Crest. Writer and naturalist Jennifer Hahn will be here with a preview of her presentation of the library Monday night on Foraging for Food. And we'll talk with Tim Olson from 360 North TV and Jeff Jesse from the Mental Health Trust Authority about a new series on mental health. We'll also be hearing Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more. And that'll be tomorrow at 3 on KTO-FM. The Juneau weather calls for showers with a low around 44 tonight, south winds at 10 miles per hour, and they'll become light and variable late.